So, Julie, what does slot mean to you?
Do you mean the foundation?
Yeah.
It's developed over the years, so I'm really not sure. Actually, it means Aaron Levy and his ideas and his enthusiasm and his interest in a lot of different in people and ideas and people that do things. And now from what you've been telling me, you're getting more into doing projects that have political and social consequences and also that are beginning to bring in the neighborhood. It's really, really interesting. So that you have an art situation that you begin to branch out and use the insights that you all have to impact other areas of the society. And I think it's really interesting.
Okay, so the second question is, how do you see the relationship between the physical space of Slot Foundation in Philly, so this gallery, the digital space of slot.org, and the numerous slot initiatives in the world at large? How do we make evident and represent this interconnectedness within our graphic identity and online?
What's a graphic identity?
Like our logo, and how, either in print or online, how do we communicate who we are through a logo or...
Yeah, like with EAT, like even...
EAT, yes. We never did a brochure. We were never able to do a brochure. Our logo was this... Rauschenberg chose EAT. We called it EAT Ugly. that was our... And so there was never...
But that was also part of the identity of EAT.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is more... Well, I think, obviously... I'm a big believer in words. So you tell people, you know, we have a space, we have a website, and we do all these different projects. And if you you work with somebody who you like to develop a logo or a graphic that feels right to you, don't you think? Mm-hmm.
As EAT was developing through chapters as a network, how did you communicate EAT to this ever large, growing, kind of expanding?
What
network?
Happened was that it was really it almost took us by surprise. EAT started, and then people in different places around the country, they said, can we start our own EAT chapter? Can we get our artists and engineers together to start our own chapter? And so we said, sure. Sometimes Billy would go and talk to them, or I remember going to Portland. But essentially, our idea was that they were independent. I mean, they had their own nature. We held one conference where people came and we talked about our experience, what we'd done, and the different things, but we let each of them develop it on their own. So there was no sense. I mean, we didn't have the staff, we didn't have the time, and probably not the interest in building a national organization or an organization that tried. And so many of them just dissipated. I mean, after the enthusiasm of the one person who wanted to put it together, for a few years they had mm-hmm. projects and programs, and then.
But did you also, was there also a logic, much like your larger framework of trust and of not wanting to overdetermine the identity of the chapter?
Right. I mean, very much the idea that each one would be different because mm-hmm. it was a different part of the country. Mm-hmm. I think I've discovered since then that in Portland and Seattle, the person that started it was a graphic designer at Boeing and was doing some of the first computer graphic stuff. So some of the early projects that they did had to do with computer graphics. They were very influenced by the music scene, so they were involved in music. In L.A., David McDermott and Artisan Phillips had an organization, and then they kind of decided to do work with EAT. And there, they were involved in the pavilion, so that was very... But it really was the idea that each... In Europe, I know Robbie Robinson, who was an engineer on Nine Evenings and then went to work for Ted Keel, he went to Amsterdam, and so he gave a talk about EAT, and they said, what do you mean? You mean somebody doesn't lead the group? You mean people can, you know, just collaborate? You know, the whole sense of this, the openness, was not a European idea. And they really, and though they had a group for a while, it would have its own maybe they'd have a critic or a lead artist, I don't know, but they developed on their own.
Maybe this is related to the second question, because we started with zero.
Right.
And so this is really a third question, but we're labeled it as
Why
second.
Did you start with zero, just out of curiosity?
I don't know.
To be playful, I don't know.
To be playful, yeah.
Okay, that's fine.
Or maybe because we thought that would be a question that would inform the others, but might not itself be...
It's different. It is different.
At the heart of what we're trying to get at. It's a start. It's a way to start the conversation.
Right,
So I guess the one labeled as two, which is de facto a three, should an experimental institution have a fixed graphic and online identity? How do we translate a fluid identity across multiple projects, voices, and cultures? I guess this picks up on what we've been talking about. Like, you know, I remember, I have them still here, right, in the closet, these Techne, for instance, newsletters. Mm-hmm. There was a graphic.
Yeah, well, actually, yes, exactly. We did work with, I think that was that Tom Gormley? I mean, we asked an artist, we would ask an artist, if we were doing something, we said, an artist, will you design something for us, or will you do this, the layout? But I think you just get something, and I mean, IBM, for God's sake, they have a graphic identity, it's a damn IBM, it's across every country in the world, do you know what I mean? You do something you like, and then you stick with it, don't you think? I mean, it doesn't have to change, it doesn't have to be, and it's Google, I mean, whoever would think that, you know, the universe, Google, I think you do something, and then that's it, and that'll be, and then you use it on your website, you use it on your stationery, you use it. I mean, maybe I'm not answering the question.
If ever there was an organization that embodied to me both a changing openness to future, to process, to trust in artists, to saying yes as a position, as a philosophy, that was EAT, and that is EAT. So why didn't you don't feel like the graphic identity needs to also encapsulate that same spirit?
No, I don't think so. I think it's the graphic identity is just, you know, your name and address and phone number and now your website. I mean, how people can reach you.
Right.
Now, maybe it's changed. I mean, maybe, you know, with so much, with the ability to do these kind of graphic things. But you know, Fred Waldauer said once, we were talking about... he was this wonderful, wonderful engineer that really was one of the engineers that got it and was a very close collaborator with Billy and worked with David Tudor a lot. But he said, you know, at first when a computer is user-friendly, it's very nice, but after a while, it gets in your way. You don't want user-friendly computer. You want to be able to, you know, do things fast. You know what I mean? So I think it's the same with websites for me. Mm-hmm. You know, if that's all, you have to wait until, you know, so the fourth time you come and you have to wait for this graphic thing to play out, that's not what you want. You want, I think people want the information, and they want it, you know, fast, and they want it.
It's true that I always, one of the things I remember is, like, the phone was this technology that was so important to you guys and to communicating with you guys, and you had different phone numbers in New York City area code and elsewhere so that it would be easy to reach you.
Right, we had a New York City number in New Jersey, right?
Yeah.
I was looking, it's amazing, I was on the train yesterday and so I was sitting in the cafe part. There was a guy there, he had his computer, he had his little, you know, thing that makes it Wi-Fi, and he had a phone. And he was conducting a meeting with three or four people through his phone on the train. And I thought, Billy would have loved this. I mean, he wanted a portable office. He wanted to reach people. You know, he was well known for being able to find people by the phone, no matter where. So I think it's ease of reaching people, of giving them the information. Did you know what I mean? I don't think you have to change. You know,
but
if you're
the website doesn't have to enable that meeting. It just has to, like, provide you with the information so you can do it elsewhere. Like, the website shouldn't itself embody that convergence.
I mean, how would it? How would you do it, in a sense? I mean, does it interest you to try that? I mean, does it interest
like,
you?
Like something today, like we have our various platforms, Skype and these kinds of projects and programs that enable us to converse with one another. And in a way, EAT, and maybe today also Slot, is about that enabling of conversation. Should the website be a site where you, like, maybe I'm getting ahead of ourselves, but should it be a site where you, like, just present information that allows you to call somebody up, or should it itself be a site of conversation?
Well, of course it can be everything. I mean, that's the thing. The thing about, well, I mean, you're limited by money, time, whatever. But the difference is I should have talked about that. That's interesting, is that the kind of limitations and scarcity that you had in the 50s and 60s doesn't exist anymore. You had one telephone line, you had a telephone line, you could call one person, and that was a conversation. Now, with Skype, I assume you can set it up. You know, the limitations aren't there. Mm-hmm. So your website, it can be it can be everything, and it can have all the different aspects of your organization. But each one of them will take its own form. If you want people to be able to come there and connect with other people, that's possible. But if there are also people that you want to introduce to the organization, I just think clarity. When people come, they know what it is. Mm-hmm. They know where in the world you are. I hate that. I get the website. Where are they? But this maybe is me. You know, are they in Kathmandu or are they in Philadelphia? Uh-huh. So for me, things like addresses and phone numbers and quick.
In the early days of EAT, did you feel that people were confused as to what EAT was, or no? I mean, you guys were like us. You're all over the place, both philosophically.
Well, the first few years, it was really about trying to interest engineers in working with artists. So there was and then no, it didn't bother us. We never did the same thing twice. I mean, that was probably a problem, but. When opportunities came up to do something, you did it, and I don't think so. I don't think people said, "Who are you?" or what.
The fact that you didn't ever do the same thing twice wasn't difficult for others to follow, or that was the spirit of the times that was something
maybe
that
was
you respected and you valued in a way.
Yeah, we did the exhibition at the Brooklyn Museum, so we could have done a yearly exhibition. We could have, but it didn't, and we went on to do other things. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, it probably was a weakness of the situation because, it's good to get together expertise about certain things and then, that you can do them again. But I don't think people, I don't know, they probably made it with, art and technology was kind of easy to understand in a way. Mm-hmm. I think the name Experiments in Art and Technology, we never liked the name, Billy hated the name because he said artists don't experiment. They do things, you do a project. You don't experiment in the same way that you probably know if your father was a mathematician. If you fail, that can give you information too. You do an experiment, it doesn't work out the way you want it. That could be as good as succeeding. So the whole Billy's idea was scientific experimentation, so that's why he didn't like the word experiments. But somehow art and technology caught people's imagination. Mm-hmm. And whether they understood it or not, art and technology worked. Mm-hmm. So I don't think there was necessarily anybody, saying, who the hell are you? Or maybe with Slott Foundation, it's a little bit harder. Mm-hmm. So maybe you need a tagline, Slott Foundation, Experiments for the Future, or working together. I don't know. I mean, I'm just, maybe that's just what you're saying, is that you're too anonymous, that the name itself is too anonymous, and that you need, a phrase or a few phrases you can say right away.
Yeah, we always wanted people to be able to find in the organization what they were looking for, what they projected onto it, but it also makes for a complexity because it's anonymous, as you say.
But how do you mean what they project onto?
We wanted to be an organization that was responsive to different communities, different issues, that was changing in time, that was responding to artists and others, and that means that our identity is fluctuating a bit, and our programs are fluctuating. And we didn't feel that we could encapsulate that within a word or a phrase, so we almost came up with an anonymous word that you would just kind of associate that hybridity with,
mm-hmm.
that fluidity with. But then it's also hard for people that don't already know us to know what we are.
Right.
You know, so there's always been a challenge. But I like the experiments.
Experiments for the future.
Experiments in the future, experiments for the future, experiments. What did you say?
What did you say? I don't know. It'll be there.
It's in the recording.
It's something like that.
How should our archive be made relevant and contemporary to a variety of audiences? How can we enter and conceive of the archive as at once indexable and navigable, yet fundamentally heterogeneous?
So we have almost like a 400-hour audio repository, like EAT had this extraordinary archive that's now at the Getty, from what I understand. And like, so how do you, that archive is also who we are. So how do we make that available in an accessible manner in an age of the internet?
Kind of a good segue. Last question.
Well, you put it on the internet, mm-hmm. and you just hope people find it.
So if you had...
I mean, you know, not hope people find it, but, you know, I mean, people search, to me, search is like, that's what made the computers possible.
Uh-huh.
I mean, if you didn't have search functions...
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
There's no way you can come up with a system like a Dewey Decimal System for the internet,
mm-hmm.
even the Dewey Decimal System. So the fact that you can put things in and search them,
mm-hmm.
relate them, I mean, mm-hmm. I think just a database which you begin to, and you can have different databases, right? Different ones for different names and.
Uh-huh.
But I think you want to put your thinking into the database, how you want people, make it accessible,
mm-hmm.
for people who are searching and if they.
But like, for instance.
But what do you see as the issue?
I guess today, there's this sense that accessibility means very different things to different people.
Oh really?
And
how
that like, for instance, if you know, like, you know, I've known you guys for many years, and you guys have inspired the spirit of this organization in direct and indirect ways. So, like, I know Billy Kluver's name, I know your name, I know EAT, I know Nine Evenings, and so I understand that, for instance, Nine Evenings has been, as this material, the media, the film is made available, like the beautiful DVDs. You know, it's labeled under John Cage, you know, variations, etc., and there's the emphasis on the proper name, on the event, but some, like, we have also this quandary now where not everybody knows who John Cage is, and so we're trying to figure out, like, so how do we make an archive accessible that for some is not going to be accessible only because of the proper name of the artist, and like, so what is the interface? How is it just, maybe it's the search, as you said.
I mean, you know, you put other terms, you know, mm-hmm. music
mm-hmm.
mushrooms,
uh-huh.
and all of a sudden they come. But I don't you have to assume a certain interest on the part of the people?
Mm-hmm.
You know, guy walking down the street, there's no way you're going to get him interested.
Uh-huh.
But if somebody is interested in music or... I mean, who do you want to reach out to?
Right.
I mean, maybe these kids that come in. Now this is very interesting because you're going to start working with a population of people that don't know, uh-huh. don't have the same reference, but
we're
maybe
talking about mixed place.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
What's it called?
A mixed place, because we want to mix people.
Right. I mean, maybe then you say, oh, you know, they can talk about saying, oh, you know, John Cage, who's he? And then,
mm-hmm.
then. What you want is when people search, they get to the information, don't you think?
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
mm-hmm.
you can't. And I think that at this point it's still word. I think they're going to begin to be able to do image recognition in this, but it's still everything is word recognition,
mm-hmm.
isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
So on your website, you know, Cage and
mm-hmm.
and then linking to other things,
mm-hmm.
linking to
mm-hmm.
Wikipedia or getting your... I don't know how important links are, like if Cage and then somehow your project is on the Wikipedia page for Cage.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Then they link here.
Do you think the archive should be centralized? Like, ultimately, the entire archive is, in the case of EAT, is now at the Getty. right?
I think it should be put online. I would love to digit. Not everything, but I...
But how do you take a life? In every sense, how do you take a life of correspondence, of recordings, of objects? Like, how do you take this enormous mass of material, and how would you make that available on a Getty website? Would it be the search function, the question, like, who is X?
I think so. Yeah. I mean, okay. For this, if somebody, if maybe somebody's looking up Cage performances, they're interested in different Cage pieces, then they would come on Cage, how to get started, and then your archive of that. First there would be, maybe some other, but then your archive would come up, and then they would be able to get into your archive, right? Or they'd be able to click on your link, and then you would have an introduction that this is what happened, and then click on these places to...
But you shouldn't be... What if somebody wanted to learn about EAT? And they come to SLA, and we don't have that much there, but we do have the recording that you just did. Shouldn't it be possible for them to go straight to your engagement and not necessarily through John Cage? Do you know what I mean? Like, how do you create different pathways through the archive? Or is that not a concern in a way to you?
Well, I really think, you're talking, it's really about the architecture of your website. I think this is it's, you have to talk to somebody probably who knows about how to structure databases and websites. I don't know. I mean, if somebody was, why would somebody want to get to me doing a John Cage performance if they were interested in EAT? I mean, that's a question. Now maybe they would.
Because your engagement emerged out of a very contextual invitation to be part of that project.
Right, but I mean, maybe if you start indexing what people talked about here, and then the fact that I talked about EAT might be interesting.
So you would say that the archive should not necessarily be an artwork in the way that it is presented online. It should be accessible, and accessibility means one should work with those that have a specialty in developing the architecture of a website in a way.
Because
it shouldn't feel like an artwork. It should feel just like a fairly traditional and accessible interface to an archive.
If that's what you're doing. Yeah. I mean, if you want to then go and say, I want to make an artwork out of this, I mean, what's the reason to do that? I mean, maybe you think something else will come out of it if people can interface it in a kind of intuitive way that things come at them. I don't know, but that's different from making an archive. I mean, I don't think we've gotten away from archive as information or people wanting straight. With this, it seems to me who would be interested in this would want to go from each, from one to another, would want to be able to read it, see their photos, and work with it, and then get their own idea about it. Now, if you wanted to make the material available so they could do a mashup or a report or something of their own. But that's not...
But this is one... Fairy Tale is one project within the larger archive. But if my experience 10 years or 12 years ago was not speaking to you and Billy, but rather just reading a book or watching these DVDs, I feel like I would have had a different understanding of EAT. Maybe that's not what you want. You want that DVD to reproduce. But the way you enter, the way you access things, the people that you access things through, the way you get somewhere shapes how you understand what you're reading and processing. So I guess that's what I was thinking, like, to what degree should the archive be structured in such a way that you're encouraged to think differently than you might if you went to Google or to the library. Like, to what degree should we be artistic because we're an arts organization? To what degree should we be playful in how the knowledge is understood and accessed, because that will shape how the knowledge is received?
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Like when I would see you and Billy, like, there would be helium balloons being kicked around. There'd be the blue Eve Klein on the mantle. There was like an atmosphere, and that atmosphere completely transformed how I understood what you were saying.
That's I don't know. It's very interesting. I see what you're saying. I mean, you want to provide people with a full experience.
Yeah. But maybe that's too much. Maybe that's,
whether you can or not is a real question. I mean, in films, you can because you're there and you've filmed the person in their environment. Maybe seeing the room, maybe... I mean, I see your point, but...
The internet is not necessarily the perfect medium for that.
No, and that's... Well, I mean, I don't know. I mean, who knows whether people can begin to do virtual reality things, but... But we didn't plan an environment for you to come into to be influenced by.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, that's just the way we lived. And then you responded to it.
So it's
more the person's responding. So maybe they would, no matter what you present to them, they'll respond to it in an interesting, if they're open.
It's true because at the same time, you did welcome me into an environment that was marked by trust, by yes, by conversation. And it's difficult with the internet to create those kinds of...
Well, it's difficult. Yeah, it's difficult with media. It's difficult with mediated reality. So that's what... So you're saying... So that what you're answering your question is how important the physical space here is.
Yeah.
Now, you reach less people, but the experience can be something that is more... Is really meaningful on an individual level.
Yeah.
And I mean, archives are about what's already happened. The physical space can be about what's happening. It's about physically influencing, interacting with people. And so that's why, and we're still people. Billy would always say, we're still analog. We're definitely analog.
Well, we kind of have answered, you've just answered the final fifth question, but I guess maybe we should still ask it.
Well, so the final question was, on our website, how can we cultivate publics and imaginative models for public conversation in a way that encourages meaningful engagement?
So I guess understanding that we're analog, what do we do with the website?
You could program things that are for the website, that are Skype conversations, that we're going to do, you know, at... For the people, again, who are interested, at X amount of time, we're going to have people in China, Mongolia, and Kenya, and we're going to talk.
And we're going to talk about even the something in the archive, even.
Or your conversation, your film conversation here. I mean, that's one. I mean, Skype is one. There may be others. I mean, I think what you're saying here, you use the internet as a tool the same way you use your space. You have to think of it as a tool. If that's what you want to do, if you want to engage people. If you want, or you have a website where people come and make comments. I don't know who, that's what I'm thinking. I didn't say it in this, but I think the next generation, which is you all, of people who've lived with this technology, will come up with something. I mean, I think so many of the ideas on the internet up till now, John Cage thought about, and Robert Rauschenberg thought about, and it now is possible to do. It was harder to do, you couldn't really do it, but the ideas were there. I think the next generation of people like yourselves, the young people, it's new ideas because your experience of the technology is so different. So I can't, you know, to me, you know, I want to go to the website and I want information because I'm used to looking things up in a dictionary. I'm word centric, whatever. But the idea that you can, you know, on an iPhone or a smartphone, that you have instant information, instant experience, and you have to make it not just about buying. The trouble is, you know, it's being hijacked by, it's all about buying, but the tools are there for artists and young people to use it to make it something else. Sure, you could have a seminar on the Cage Project and if people who wanted to be part of it. But, I mean, the forms are the same. It's like a class. Okay, so class is that's a form that people know about. You say, on this time you can call in, listen to the recordings, what do you think about it, how would you do it, why, you know... I don't know, that's a way of using the archive, or mm-hmm. or if somebody, people in China all of a sudden, you know, 5 years from now want to see what it was like for people, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. then mm-hmm. you could form something around what you've done. Mm-hmm. So you're not passive, let people just come to this. But you want to move on. You want to do your next project. And if your next project involves your archive, that's great. Mm-hmm. But it may be something completely different. But if you want to work toward involving what you've done and getting people involved because you think it's really, the lessons you've learned are really valuable. That's what you're saying. You're saying you think it's not just the material, but the lessons and the experiences you've learned from doing these projects is something you want to somehow communicate mm-hmm. beyond just the information. It becomes mm-hmm. interesting and have people access it that way. But don't confuse art with information. mm-hmm. Maybe I'm wrong. I mean, obviously there's information in art, but. It's like saying, why did you do zero? I mean, was there a real reason? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a European European elevator. The rez-de-chaussée, and then the first floor is really the second floor. So maybe it makes people think, you know. Just do it. Just go. I think you really don't know what's going to interest people and what's going to... I mean, a lot of people come through our house and you know. But he had Aaron who it meant something to, and the same thing with different projects. And so.
But so do you plan for the fact that they don't know what they're looking for? They may find whatever they want to find. Do you try to anticipate, I guess, to use that word that you were just speaking about? Try to anticipate where they're going to go, or do you just allow them to...
Allow them to go. I mean, if there's any lesson of Cage, you do situations which allow people the greatest freedom to go the way they want. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't become chaos because people find their way. How do you click around the internet? I mean, it's, you know, you click and you see one thing, oh, that's interesting. You go, and it next thing you know, you're somewhere completely else. So you offer possibilities. It's really about, I mean, 400 hours of tape is more than anybody can deal with. But in that, there'll be things that will appeal to different people. So how do you make that? I think keep up with what the scientists are doing. You know, find a computer person who's really interested in databases, in building interfaces. These guys in France are doing something with EAT, and I don't understand it, but it's very interesting. And I can,
that'd be great.
I'll ask if I can send you the link.
That'd be great. That'd be great.
But that's another thing is make this a collaborative project with, you know, because it's beyond one's technical ability to do it, I think. But. Somebody can.